Hi, this is Time Capsule, episode 146, and this is Tony Tolato.
Hi, this is Justin Hartley from Smallville and Gemini Division.
I'm Michael Shanks of Stargate SG-1.
Hello, my name is Kristanna Loken.
Hi all, this is Rockne S. O'Bannon, creator of Alienation and Farscape.
Hey, this is James Denton from Desperate Housewives and All-Star Superman.
Hey, it's Greg Grunberg, the mind-reading cop on Heroes.
Hello, I am C-3PO, Human Cyborg Relations.
This is Leonard Nimoy.
Hi, I'm Angel Colby. I play Guinevere in Merlin.
Hi, this is Billy Boyd. I play Pippin in Lord of the Rings. And you're listening to Sci-Fi Talk.
Live long and prosper.
Divergent opens on March 22nd. That's next Friday. And Shailene Woodley has the title role and describes the world of Divergent.
The world of Divergent is giant. It's sort of unfathomable. The pit alone, the pit we're in right now, is almost the size of a whole soundstage. They really, you know, it's one thing to read a book, especially a book about the future, and then to come up with that world, and through the director Neil Berger, and through the art department, as well as every other department involved in this movie, they created something that is relatable. You know, it's something we recognize in today's world, in today's society, but it's also tweaked just enough to establish that it is something of the future. You know, we're of the future in this movie. We're not in the present day.
Look for that, more of that on next week on Time Capsule episode 147, and early April, Captain America and the Winter Soldier opens. Chris Evans is once again Cap.
On this film, I think we really get to show Cap advancing in his skills and stepping up the fighting a bit more. You know, I think especially after Avengers, you see how amazing everyone on that team is and what they bring to the table. Cap needs to offer more than just a few good punches and kicks. So the Russos and I all agreed we want to make this. They had some great references from things like The Raid and even the Captain America video game. The Captain America video game, he moves very well in the game. And I would play the game and say, man, this is how Cap should be moving. And it was a really acrobatic approach to fighting. So they said we should put you in gymnastics class, or I don't know who said it first, but either way, gymnastics classes happened, and they were great. I had a really good time.
Marvel Studios president and executive producer Kevin Feige tells us that they spent quality time with Captain America this time around.
In the Avengers, we got to spend a little time with him as he was navigating the modern day. But really, that film takes place over a tight period of time when Loki is there and the aliens are about to invade and the threat is gigantic right off the bat. So he doesn't have a lot of time to sort of contemplate his new position in this new world. And we wanted to explore that this time. And it's great because Chris Evans is such a good actor and is growing into this part and is embracing this part in such a great way that we get to see those other sides of Steve as he navigates this world of grays when he came from a place where it was very clear who the good guys were, who the bad guys were.
Anthony and Joe Russo have already been signed for Captain America 3, and they talk about the Winter Soldier.
You can't have a thriller without stakes, and stakes are emotional. Stakes have to play real. And especially in a political thriller, which has sort of contemporary themes to it, you have to play as real as possible to relate to the audience. Otherwise, I think you're losing a layer or texture you can't really call yourself a political thriller unless you're topical. So it was important on that level that we ground the movie because you've got to make the audience care.
Captain America and the Winter Soldier, as I said, opens April 4th at a theater near you. See it on the big screen and IMAX. On Premium Focus is Carl Mueller from my program Conversations that just launched on Premium. And he talks about his film Mr. Jones, coming out this May on DVD. Carl Mueller's movie Mr. Jones is out on DVD and also on demand. The cool thing about this is a thriller that really harkens back to the old days, but using today's handheld camera technology. Here's my conversation with Carl Mueller.
Hi, how are you? Nice to meet you. I think you got a neat little movie there from what I saw of it. I actually had a clip on my website I put on this morning, and I watched it, and I go, whoa. There's some nice handheld stuff that goes in the one scene that I got. Now, I'm sure you had to coordinate that with your actors so that they were in the right place. Because there's literally one scene where the camera moves from her to him without a cut. So, I mean, explain kind of the planning process to do all of that to have things run a lot smoother.
Well, the movie, it sort of evolves through different styles in it, but especially in the beginning, some of it's being filmed by the characters, but the character is a little different in this movie from other found footage movies, that we sort of tried to posit him as being a pretty sophisticated documentary filmmaker who's almost a little pretentious. We sort of tried to go for that style a little bit. And the conceit we came up with is that he would sort of mount a GoPro camera facing himself as he was filming stuff, and as he's sort of exploring these new places. So we had to, you know, we would film in one direction, my DP would have it handheld, and he'd do certain moves, and then John, who was operating that camera as an the actor playing Scott, he would have to then recreate those moves with a camera that he was operating, pointing at himself, and also give a performance at the same time, which
was really interesting.
I don't know how he did it, because I couldn't even remember the camera moves myself, much less give a performance, but he was amazing at it.
Now, you were inspired by your boyhood in Minnesota by going up to a cabin. Was it like a little bit of that child's imagination of kind of finding scary things around the corner that aren't there?
Absolutely. I mean, there's something about going in the deep woods, especially when you're a kid, but even now, that gets your imagination sort of pumping. You know, you're away from all the distractions of the city and the people that are out there that you're isolated with. You start to maybe look at them a little closer and sort of start wondering, what are they up to? And as far as, you know, being a child, I think children always want to create the character of a boogeyman and sort of something that's scary, and they can make up stories and scare themselves about, but then feel safe and they retreat back home. So I tried to, I guess, kind of keep that spirit in the making of this movie. I think that there's something that sort of harkens back to that, I guess.
Absolutely. The guy working in the woods, working on these outrageous sculptures. Talk about that. I mean, I saw one of like the scarecrow-like creature. Yeah. It looked like the Wizard of Oz's scarecrow, like on acid or something. Yeah. It was amazing.
Well, yeah, it was one thing to write the script and say that this guy makes these very bizarre, disturbing, yet beautiful scarecrows, but then when you get in production, you actually have to make those scarecrows, which is a whole nother ballgame. So we had to like search high and low on the internet and any contact we could find until we finally found this guy named Pumpkin Rot, who lives in rural Pennsylvania, who basically year-round he makes bizarre scarecrows and puts them up in Halloween tableaus and photographs them in cool ways. And it's just kind of his passion in his life, and it was this amazing fit that we could get him, and he seemed very excited to get involved. He had like 2 months to make, I think, I want to say 18 of these things and ship them out to us, and by God, he got it done.
And as far as your cabin, where did you find it? I mean, a lot of times, sometimes they'll write a script based on a location, but how was it in this case?
In this case, we searched high and low. We really wanted to shoot in Southern California because most of the people involved were located around there, and because we had a pretty low budget, so we really had to scramble to find a place that had woods. But we found this movie ranch like 45 miles north of Los Angeles that happened to have in a little valley like a nice thicket of woods, had these abandoned houses. There was an abandoned mine shaft that the property owner had. It's in the movie, so it ended up working out really well, but it was difficult.
Real quickly, what do you have coming up next? Are you working on anything?
I have a movie that I wrote coming out in October called The Devil's Rapture. That's sort of a Amish horror movie, I guess you could say. And I've, as far as my next directing project, I've just finished a script last week that's sort of kind of a thriller crime movie with a very strange chronological structure that I'm excited about.
Very cool. I'm excited about this. This looks great. Mr. Jones, I love it. Thank you.
There's so much more. Visit scifitalk.com, click on the premium link on the top of the page, and then on that page, get premium access link to get you started. Once you create a My Libsyn account, you can choose a subscription level that's just right for you. You'll be able to listen to content as long as you're logged in right from my premium page, iOS app, or Android app. One subscription lets you log in and access premium content from all three. It's real easy. And I certainly hope you'll join me and my other subscribers to Sci-Fi Talk Premium. Spotlight today has Da Vinci's Demons, which is returning for season 2. In a recent phone press conference, the stars, Tom Riley, who is Da Vinci, and Laura Haddock, who is Lucrezia, spoke to us reporters about their favorite episodes this year.
I think
My favorite episode is, well, I love the last one.
Yeah, but you can't say anything about
that. I can't say anything about that one. But what I can say is that number four, just from a personal standpoint, episode four is probably my favorite because I got the opportunity to go back and play Lucretia when she was about 15 or 16 years old before, and actually experience something that happened in her life. And what happened was tragic and changed her forever. So I got to play and meet the girl before this happened, and I have a clearer understanding of why she is the way that she is. So that was very interesting for me.
I absolutely love four as well, actually. I think it's an incredible episode. And I'm not in it very much, which is quite nice. I've got a break. But also, I really like episode five, which is around the time where the slightly wider, more expansive version of our show really shows its hand, and we experience the new world for the first time. I think that's a really that's going to really please people.
Now, will the Book of Leaves play a larger role this coming season?
It certainly is true. The quest won't be stalled any longer, and we've been hinting at it since the second episode of the first season with that map on the wall of Leonardo's workshop that he found in the pages of the Jews book. And so we are now finally setting off, literally setting off in pursuit of it. And will we learn more about it? Yes and no. But we'll certainly learn how important it is to at least two of the characters in the show, if not more.
They were asked, how have they seen their characters grow in season two?
Well, for me, I've always known that that Leonardo was going to be steadily maturing over the series from this brash, cocky young man that we met in the first episode, who was difficult to like, who behaved badly to the people around him, who took his own genius for granted and didn't care about its consequences. And we were going to slowly mutate him into the man that's perhaps better known from history. So I get the chance to do the beginning of that in the second season and begin to show him realizing that his behavior may not just be having an effect on those around him, but it might be having an effect on him as well. So he is slowly, if season one was his youth, season two is his adolescence, and he's beginning to come to an understanding of himself. Acting challenges wise, it's always the biggest challenge is just to like meet it out slowly and have the confidence to not show your hand all at once and try and add nuance when you really want to jump to the end. So yeah, that's for me.
I think for me the most interesting discovery that I had was again, I keep talking about going back in time, but for me that was actually the most helpful thing this year, was to go back and visit her as a young woman with all the kind of hopes and dreams that young teenagers have, ready to fall in love and have her heart broken and enjoy life and be happy. And then something happened to her which meant that all ended, and there was no way of her ever being able to forget that. And so for me it was really lovely to be able to discover her as a young girl, and then that helped my understanding of who she was as a young woman.
Would you say that was the biggest acting challenge?
I adored doing those moments. I think the biggest challenge for me comes towards the end of the series. I don't want to give too much away, but there was an opportunity for Lucretia to stand in front of all the people that she's ever wanted to in her life and tell the truth. And that was a really challenging moment for me, because I was stood in front of all my peers and all the actors that I respect so much, and I had to, in that moment it was just me and I had to pull it off.
I think you smashed it.
So that was probably the biggest challenge of the season.
And what was it like to come back to start the new season?
It was, to be honest, once you've you've begun to have a character fleshed out. It was surprisingly easy to step back into the shoes. We've done so much talking in between the series about it, and we devoted the previous 8 months and then a lot of time to promotion, that almost the weird thing that happens when you're promoting a show is you talk about a part so much that you find yourself discovering stuff about the part when you do the promotion with.
Certainly, and we've really lived with it for 2 years. You know, we've not let go of it, so it's been... We had a hiatus from filming, but we didn't have a hiatus from the creative process at all. We just carried on communicating and also the writers were in the writers' room quickly after we stopped filming the first season. So we were being sent ideas and treatments pretty early on.
The new world will figure prominently in season two.
Well, the new world, as you say, is something we've been promising for a while, and we couldn't stop. I mean, I remember David read a blog I think I read a blog once episode two came out. Someone said, oh, I'd watch a show where Leonardo gets on a boat and goes to the new world, but that's never going to happen. And I remember thinking, yeah, it is. That's exactly the plan. But I would say what happens there, without spoiling anything, is you're going to see, and this isn't just, admittedly, just for the journey to the new world. This is for the individual journeys that... And all our characters go on a journey. Lorenzo goes on a journey. Lucretia goes on a journey. And Clarice even goes on a journey whilst remaining geographically in the same place. I would say you will see characters thrown together in configurations that you haven't seen before that are going to bring out different sides of the characters.
Lucretia doesn't go to the new world, but she does certainly go on her own journey, her own quest to avenge something that happened to her in her past. And she has been doing this for almost 10 years and will continue to do so until she can put what happened, just kind of, you know, agreeing with what Tom was saying, all the different characters go on physical and emotional journeys this season, and we all come back at the end. I won't tell you where, but we do all come back at the end, so we're all looking forward to that.
And what type of research did you both do for the second season?
I have to be honest, I did a lot of the research on Leonardo and his personality prior to the first season. So there is so little that exists about the period between his lines 27 to 32 that David has been using as this sort of black hole that he can fill with the crazy stuff that happens in Peru. That there isn't anything for me to research, no historical basis to plug into. But so at that point you start just trusting the writers. You go with where they're taking the character, because this is a very different spin on Leonardo. It's a more fun version. The show is sets out to be entertaining, and I think I just wanted to trust where the writers were going to take him rather than trying to be too slavish to anything I could find in the history books.
And for me, towards the end of the series, Lucretia does something completely unbelievable that will change the face of Italy forever, and I didn't know too much about what it is that we've said that Lucretia did, so I won't say it or spoil it, but I had to do lots of research into this certain event in history, and so kind of did a lot of that prior to filming those scenes. But other than that, the writers gave us some great stuff to do, and certainly I would have done all my preparation anyway before season one, deciding on who this woman was and what her history was, but season two I actually got to go back and play that and explore that for real, so I didn't feel like I needed to do too much research other than towards the end of the series.
Da Vinci's Demons premieres on March 22nd on Starz. I want to thank them for supplying me with the audio from the press conference. And that is Time Capsule Episode 146. I'm Tony Tolato. Thanks so much for listening.
Hello, this is David Franklin, Captain Bracca from Farscape. You're listening to Sci-Fi Talk.